Welcome to the Basketball Index podcast. I'm your host, Taylor, and today we're doing, part four of my player rankings. If you haven't checked out the article, you can head to bballindex.com, check out my 2023-24 midseason player rankings. In our previous episodes, we've pretty much been going by tier. Episode one, we did the A-plus tier. Episode two, we did the A tier. And then in the most previous episode, we did the A-minus and the B-plus tier. So we're getting through it. We're going to continue today. We're going to cover the B tier of players. This is players that I ranked 39 through 48th. I know this is really hard to sometimes visualize just by listening. Again, if you want to check out the article, it's free. It's going to be in the link to this episode. So if you haven't read it, read it, I guess. I think it's worth your time. Or just at least click on it, and there's an image that shows the top 48 players ranked in the order they're in and the tiers. So that'll make it a lot easier. So let's get into it. Let's start with Aaron Gordon. You know, I had a little anecdote, a little funny story to open the podcast with up yesterday that I had thought of, but I forgot it. I don't remember what it is. Oh, ellipticals. Ellipticals have changed. This is not what it is, but this is just something that's happened in my life. I was at the gym the other day, and there's a next evolution in ellipticals. I didn't know about this. So, like, before, it was you kind of, like, slid your feet forward, backward on a little bit of a track, and it would go up and down. But there was kind of, like a set, I don't know if it would be called your gait, but there was like a set movement you were allowed to do on the elliptical. And I always found it very uncomfortable because I think I just have a different stride length than the average person. But they've invented a new one that it feels like when you're on it that you're practicing to use one of those mechs in, is it Edge of Tomorrow? Edge of Tomorrow, the Tom Cruise movie with Emily Blunt? They're in those mechs and they're fighting those aliens and they're like bulky and kind of moving strangely. But the new elliptical has the foot, you put your feet on the big plastic things and there is like a big bar that connects it to like the greater machine. But on the back side of it, there's like a pulley system now. So now the elliptical, we'll call it pedals, can move in like a full range of motion, almost like you can go straight up and down, like almost like you're going upstairs, or you can go straight side to side like you're cross-country skiing, or you can go anywhere in between. Well, I'm going to wrap this up because I don't know how long I can talk about ellipticals, but I was just kind of impressed with the engineering where it was like, oh, you can move your legs how you actually want to use them now. And I guess the idea of ellipticals is supposed to be like low impact, but I don't know if that's true or not, but I got a bum knee. So we're rehabbing and we're getting back to pick up basketball soon. So yeah, you got to do what you can. But yeah, if you haven't been to gym in a while, ellipticals, they changed the game. You know, this goes back to, I thought about this for a long time. Chocolate syrup. We've had chocolate syrup for, I don't know how long we've had it, for a very, very long time. For the longest time, people said, there's chocolate syrup. Well, what else are you going to do with it? How are you going to improve upon this? And I like to think the guy that invented the magic shell, you know what I'm talking about? The chocolate syrup where if you pour it onto your ice cream, within like a minute or two, it hardens into that hard chocolate shell. I like to think that he spent years in the lab working on something, and they were like, it's chocolate syrup. You already made it. There's nothing else to do. And then one day, he invented magic shell, and he walked out of the lab with both arms raised. A breakthrough for science. But yeah, that's we'll talk about basketball players now. So we're doing B tier. Let's start with at number 3. All right, let's talk about basketball players. So this tier, very contentious tier. This is the tier of players that they are noticeably better than majority of the league, but they are noticeably worse than the stars of the league. So I'm just going to name some of the players. This tier got the most criticism on the internet, got the most people fired up, upset, angry, etc. So in this tier, we have Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, Jaylen Brown, Bradley Beal, Brandon Ingram. A lot of players in this tier are scorers, but they're not as good at scoring as the elite players, specifically like Jaylen Brown, Bradley Beal, Brandon Ingram, where like they're able to put up a lot of points, the efficiency isn't great and the playmaking is not elite. And I know Jaylen Brown has a reputation for defense. It's gotten worse over the years. And I've also done some tape study where it's not bad. It's just I would not at all call it a positive anymore. And some of that is, you know, when you're scoring 25 points a game or whatever he is a night, like some of your energy bar is going to go that way. But there are a lot of scorers in this tier that are not fantastically efficient, that are not fantastic playmakers, that just head-to-head are not as good as players higher on the list. And people, I don't know why. I think it might just be a volume thing. But especially Jaylen Brown being on Boston, that's part of it. Bradley Beal, you got to give him credit because he did average 30 in the season. So you're like, man, that is something. And then Brandon Ingram, the really, really tough shot making. But we'll go through players one by one. But I just kind of want to do an overview of the tier because this tier got people hot and bothered. So 39, Aaron Gordon. So I have Aaron Gordon at the top of this list. He, like Scottie Barnes in this tier also, they are not elite scorers. If you try to put Aaron Gordon on a team and he's the number two scoring option, your team's not going to be very good. But what you get in terms of versatility from Aaron Gordon is really valuable. And also I talked about it, like there's this like the basics of, okay, He's a good offensive player, not at all a great offensive player, but he can pass some, he can score, he can overpower players around the rim, he's a strong finisher, he's a good cutter on defense, is a pretty good wing stopper, has versatility, can defend near the basket again because he's really strong, has insane athleticism, and that's probably come down a little bit obviously as he's aged, but he's also bulked up some, so he lost some foot speed but he gained some strength. But he has the overall versatility to, he can guard one, he's one of the few players who can actually guard one through five. And yeah, there would be some issues guarding ones and fives, but that's the nature of how that goes. But again, quickness to, saw it earlier this season where Dame tries to drive on him, gets past him, Gordon's able to recover for a block from behind because, again, the size as well as the athleticism. So things like that, like when you're blocking stars from behind, that's like a light bulb goes off in my head where it's like, oh, not everyone can really do that. So the ability to do so many things at an above average level helps mask that, again, his scoring is, I think ideally you want Aaron Gordon scoring like 15, 16 points a game on your team with like pretty high volume because a lot of the shots are assisted. We see that he's in the perfect situation. Early in his career, not so much. Was on the Orlando Magic when they were not very good, and that was pretty much worst case scenario in terms of situation. Gets traded over to Denver, has a best case, is on an extremely good team with an all-time level passer, and is able to develop some of the best chemistry I think I've ever seen. Maybe the best chemistry duo-wise in the league right now is Jokic and Aaron Gordon. So you have to give players credit for the ability to play with other players that well. Again, another part of what he does is his ability to, you know, cut on the baseline and things like that. The athleticism, his catch radius is really large. The strength, the ability to, you know, not only be assisted on the pass, but then absorb contact if he needs to. So the physical skill set comes into play here, but also there's just like the cerebral part of it of understanding when to cut, how to get open, and he definitely understands that in spades. So Aaron Gordon does a lot of things really well and is one of those guys fits much better on the high-end team than a low-end team, because his value is able to be maximized. So I think Aaron Gordon's probably one of the more underrated players in the league, and I think people were really surprised I had him over a lot of guys that could put up 25 points a game. But again, on a really high-end team, if you were to swap Brandon Ingram and Aaron Gordon, sure, it probably helps in the regular season because you're just able to tidal wave past enough players with your offense. But when it comes to the playoffs, you could see how having Brandon Ingram with Jamal Murray and Jokic, maybe not, it's not the greatest thing in the world because, like, well, he needs the ball in his hands to excel. And why would you want to take the ball out of hands of two players that are better? It just doesn't make any sense. And then defensively, Aaron Gordon is worlds better than Brandon Ingram. So it's just like a quick thought experiment. Again, I have them in the same tier. So the way that this works is if you want to reshuffle any tier I have, I wouldn't really have a crazy argument to be had with you. But if you want to move a player a tier, that's where I would want to have a discussion or a debate or whatever it may be. So again, it's not like I have them worlds apart, but just for the Nuggets specifically, I think Aaron Gordon helps their team more than a Brandon Ingram would. And yes, there's other situations where you'd probably need more scoring, especially like self-created scoring, where Brandon Ingram could be more valuable than Aaron Gordon. I'm not saying that like it's not possible, but if you're on a super high-end team, I'd say it's more likely for Aaron Gordon to be more valuable. So let's move on. We got Zach LaVine at 40. So LaVine, obviously, this year really didn't go well. The Bulls struggled mightily out of the gate. He had injuries. There was a lot of talk of trade, and his value is not at its highest. He also has a gigantic contract. This list doesn't take into account contract, but this is a player that, from a skill set standpoint, has a very optimal skill set as a third scorer. The ability to score in isolation, the ability to hit spot-up threes, the ability to attack closeouts. Like, if you were to swap Zach LaVine and Jaylen Brown, you would have a wildly different... Again, I have them right next to each other in the rankings because I think they are similar players where you put them in a high-end situation. Like with the Celtics, Jaylen Brown gets to attack a lot of closeouts. He's very good at it. I think Zach LaVine has a similar skill set, is a better athlete, worst defender. So Jaylen Brown would get definitely the edge there. But I think, you look at Zach LaVine's efficiency stats over his career, and it's surprising. Zach LaVine had a three-year stretch in Chicago, true shooting plus of 111. That was an absurd season. Comes back, true shooting plus 107, really elite stuff. Last year it was 104. So really, really good stretch 3 years there in Chicago. Overall, 3% better than league average for his career. That's really strong stuff. Again, for not your number one, not your number two, probably your number three. But Zach LaVine as a scorer, the ability to stretch it from three, like really talented three-point shooter, and then really deadly at the rim. Again, because of the athleticism, rim shot creation, rim shot making, which takes into account shot quality, has always fared really well there. So has a super optimized kind of like analytical play style that has led to really good efficiency throughout his career. So again, if he was in a better situation, because we've just seen him on a bad Minnesota team early in his career and then a not very good Chicago team for most of his prime. Again, not old yet, so it's going to be hard to move him. He's going to be 29 next season. It's going to be really hard to move him because that contract is massive. Let me pull up the numbers for it. I think it's like 42 million off the top of my head. So he's making $40 million this year. He's going to make $43 million next year. Then he has two more years, one of those being a player option. So going into next season, it's going to be three more years of that deal with a player option at the end of it. So that's really, really big time money to commit to a third best player. But I don't know. I think he probably gets moved this offseason, and I'd be excited to see him going to a better situation. After that, number 41, Jaylen Brown. I had him as the worst contract in the league in the offseason. So Jaylen Brown is funny for me to talk about him, because if you were to, I don't know, have ChatGPT find everything I've ever said about on these podcasts, it's just gotten more and more negative over time. And I've talked about this, where as he's aged, you have to start taking out some of the potential into your ranking, because there's potential pretty much in every player below 30. There's some amount of potential in their ranking. It's because there has to be. It's how our brains work. And also, you got to cover yourself, because all of a sudden some player takes a massive jump and you're like, well, I didn't really account for the 22-year-old getting better. It's like, maybe you should have. So Jaylen Brown at this juncture is a good player. Like, I think I've tried to talk him down so much because people are always trying to talk him up. People are talking about him as like a top 20 player. It just makes no sense. Like, you start laying out who's in the back end of the top 20. It's De'Aaron Fox. It's Jalen Brunson, John Morant, Donovan Mitchell. He's just not in the same league as those guys. He is a good player, but as his career has gone on, he's moved away from being a impact defender, from being a solid to strong three-point shooter. That has gone away, and now he is much more of a great finisher, really good athlete, has developed a strong mid-range game, but it's kind of one of those things where you don't want your second or third, maybe in this case this year, fourth best player on the team. Because, yes, I'm going to put Derek White above him. You could put Porzingis above him. You could put Jrue Holiday above him. This is a weird thing where, like, when I criticize the Celtics, they're like, well, it doesn't make any sense. You think Jason Tatum's not a top 10 player, and you think Jaylen Brown's terrible, da-da-da-da. And how is this team so good? And it's like, well, because Derek White, Jrue Holiday, and Kristaps Porzingis are on it. That's how. They have an unbelievable amount of depth here in what I would call, like, B-level players that I have not seen in a while. So, back to Jaylen Brown. He is, again, really strong finisher, unbelievable. When he attacks a closeout, teams are at an extreme disadvantage. He's one of the better players in the league at doing that. Again, really strong athlete and can finish at the rim and can pull up short, hit floater, hit a pull up with pretty good consistency. So it's not to say that he doesn't have a fair amount of skill, but it's where the skill has now been distributed that makes him less effective as a non-star number one option. Because again, like having a mid-range game in your star player that's really strong, like Luka, that's great and valuable. And the lower you get down the list of players where it's like, okay, if you're in a playoff game, do you want Jaylen Brown taking 12 mid-range jumpers in a game? It's like, I'm not saying that you can't win that game because he could have, you know, it's a skill he has and he could perform well. But if you're in the Eastern Conference Finals, it's going to be hard to get to the next round with your non-number one option taking a lot of lower efficiency shots that are just frankly really difficult to hit. So Jaylen Brown's skill set change over his career has hurt. And we are at the point now where it's like he's probably not going to continue to improve because of his age. So now you're going to backslide down the rankings a little bit because you're not going to package in that potential. So that's why I got Jaylen Brown at 41. At 42, Scotty Barnes. So Scotty Barnes is similar to Aaron Gordon again in this tier where like there is some scoring out of him, but that's not the thing that makes him valuable. He is a very good passer, very strong defender who's extremely versatile. And he's been pushed more into a scorer role because Toronto isn't very good. But Scotty Barnes, I think, is this generation's Andre Iguodala. That's kind of my player comp for him. Because, again, can score, he might end up being a better passer. The passing chops look really good for a young player. And then the defensive versatility from the forward position, where it's like maybe it doesn't line up perfectly with Andre Iguodala as a player comp, but you get enough there. You kind of see where I'm going. So Scotty Barnes, for me, looks to be one of the more valuable, like, building block, number two, three, four options on a team. Probably not four, maybe three. Again, similar to Aaron Gordon, where his overall versatility could cover up the hole of a star. Where, again, let's say you have a star player like Ja Morant, and you have Scotty Barnes on the team. He's going to be able to help mitigate some of those disadvantages, right? Maybe like defensively of a ball dominant guard like Ja, where again, you can switch with Scotty Barnes reliably often. You're going to feel really good about that, and he can kind of make defensive plays all over the court. So I think he fits in really well as a building block player. I don't know how much higher he gets up the list. I think the scoring is ultimately going to cap his value, but he is a really interesting player that is very young and has a nice, broad, versatile skill set. After that, you got Pascal Siakam at 43. He's another guy where, you know, the scoring is good. The defense has been pretty solid. Again, he's traded out some of his defensive value for more offense. Some of that's been Toronto not being very good. But like before, it was like Pascal Siakam and Scotty Barnes trying to outscore teams, and that's going to be pretty tough. But Siakam has a good mid-range game, pretty good around the rim, good finisher. And he's just like a two-way wing that's pretty good, and that will get you pretty far in the league. Like, if you're above average on both ends of the court as a wing, there is a floor of value that's built into that that's pretty high. He's shown the ability to up his scoring volume some and, you know, get into the 20s. That can be helpful. That can sustain over some time when there's an injury. He, you know, played well as a young player when they won a ring in 2019. So, like, there's been versatility to his game, not only from his skill set, but a performance, what he's been asked to do. So anytime you're that versatile as a two-way wing, the floor, it's hard to put you a lot lower than this. After that, we got Rudy Gobert at 44. So you're seeing it this year. You're seeing the impact of Rudy, Minnesota's number one defense. He's a huge part of that. He is a Hall of Fame defensive center. There's always like one or two of those guys floating around in the league where they're not a very good offensive player, but the defensive value is just so through the roof that they're going to get into the Hall of Fame. He's helped a lot of teams be very productive this year with Minnesota. Same old story. He's getting older. He's in his 30s, but remains very effective. The team, unfortunately, has sustained a bunch of injuries, and it's probably going to probably kill any type of threat they were going to have in the playoffs, which is a shame. But Rudy Gobert playing at a high level, bounced back after a not-so-great season last year, and is he's number one at D. LeBron. So, again, there's a floor built into that. After that, number 45, Bradley Beal. He is a player that has been a good scorer. This season has been less than ideal going to Phoenix. He missed some time with injury. And it's one of those things where you have Devin Booker and you have Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, and there's like a lot of skill redundancy there where you have a lot of kind of on-ball scorers. So he is not in the greatest situation. He's missed some time, but he's still giving you like, he's still giving you decent scoring. And I don't know, it's the problem with Bradley Beal is like he's a pretty good scorer. He's not better than most of the other elite scorers in the league, and he doesn't give you a lot else. There's not a ton of playmaking coming out of him. When there is, it's not the most valuable. The defense is not very good, but he's able to score in bunches, and that does have some value. So this is one of those things where he's not the most ideal fit on Phoenix, but they're not a bad team. Like, he's contributing to their success on some level. So Bradley Beal is a scorer. Is a thing of like this tier has quite a few guys that are scorers that don't bring a lot else to the table where like, I don't know. Bradley Beal is, he's fine. He's in the B tier. He's better than most of the league. After that, we got Brandon Ingram at 46. So Brandon Ingram is, he's a weird career where he was on the Lakers to start out with things, and that was like the youth movement. They trade everyone for Anthony Davis. He goes to the Pelicans. He makes an all-star team. He has a crazy jump in three-point shooting. It looked to be like non-existent on the Lakers, and then it looked to be very good. Then there was a down year. Then there was a bounce back, and then the volume is way down again. So he's been a strange player in terms of the way that he's decided to play. He's a really good mid-range shooter. He performs it on really difficult shot quality. I think he's number two off the top of my head. I don't know, he's top five in mid-range shooting talent. So again, there's good scoring here. It's over 20 points a game. It has been for a long time. He's on a pretty good team. He can get to the free throw line some, but again, there's some playmaking out of him. It's not at an elite level. The defense is not good. They hide him. He I think it was like last year he was like had like the lowest or second lowest defensive usage rate of like any player in the league. Some crew was like, I don't even know how you hide someone that well. But he's a scorer, and here's the thing. He's a good scorer relative to the rest of the league. But when you compare him to just on-ball guys, his scoring is much closer to fine. Over his career, he's a hair under league average efficiency wise. If you take out that one all-star season in 2020, the efficiency's for the last couple of years basically league average, where you tell me how valuable is a guy that averages like 22, 23 points a game at league average efficiency and doesn't bring a ton else to the table in comparison to other good players. And is a negative on defense. Like, there's just a cap to the value there. So I feel like I'm very defensive with this B tier where it's like, yeah, all these players are down here, but I can't put them up there with the other player. Like, they're just, they just have obvious holes to their game. Kristaps Porzingis, I had him rated quite a bit lower last year. I was unsure about his ability to fit into a higher end team as a, you know, secondary, third, fourth option, because obviously he can't be your number one. And he went to a unique situation in Boston where they don't have a ton of ball dominant players. Where, like I said, like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are like more or less kind of wings. And then they obviously they bring in Drew Holiday, and Derek White's going to handle the ball some, but there's usage to be had with Boston, which was an interesting situation for how good the team was. And Porzingis has fit in really well. He's been unbelievable in the post, and he's always been a guy where, like, it's not like he doesn't have talent. Like, it's pretty obvious that he does. You know, a couple more years back from serious injury, looks to be pretty healthy. I know he gets banged up and he misses time, but that's part of being 7'3". But, again, at that height, with that skill, is playing really well, fit in well in Boston, has been hyper-efficient. So, you know, had to bump him up quite a bit in the rankings. And he surprised me, frankly, a little bit. So, yeah, Porzingis is just a good player. I'm always high on players with a lot of skill. He has a lot of skill. I feel like that is able to sustain poor stretches better, sustain injury better. Because the problem is when you're an athlete and then all of a sudden your leg explodes, it's like, well, what, are you good at anything on the basketball court other than running and jumping fast? It's like, not really. Well, that's going to be a problem. The skill gives you some resiliency. After that, we got Jaren Jackson Jr. at 48. This will be the last guy we talk about. So Jaren is a really good defender. He won Defensive Player of the Year last year. Has always had good D. LeBron. Crazy, crazy shot blocking numbers. But I don't know. On paper, it seems like he should be better than he is. Because you're like, okay, you get the crazy versatility from the four spot defensively. It's a very hard thing to find. When you can get that, it's great. And then on offense, he can stretch it a little bit. He shot the three over his career some. And you're like, okay, on paper, we got like a 3-and-D crazy shot blocking Defensive Player of the Year candidate. This is interesting. But we saw it in the Olympics, and then we saw it with Steven Adams going down. He's not a center. He does not play as well as a center. His strength is the ability to roam, cover ground, contest shots, come flying. His ability to cover ground on the court is, like, it's up there with, like, Anthony Davis. It's crazy. But when you're just putting him in drop coverage over and over again, that is not the place he excels. He does have some issues with, like, foul trouble, and that limits his playing time sometimes. But that's not, I'm not overly concerned with that kind of thing. But, again, when you play him as the five and he's in ball screens over and over and over again, again, you're zapping some of his value because you don't have him covering a crazy amount of ground, getting blocks that, like, no one has any business getting a part of. And then you're also jeopardizing him fouling potentially more because he's involved in more situations. On offense, he's always had kind of like a baby giraffe to him of like he's still kind of grown into his body. He's still trying to figure out how to like shield players from the ball and overpower them. I think that's gotten better. His shooting talent's taken a significant jump this year. Obviously, Jaw's been out, so him and Desmond Bane have had to do way more heavy lifting. And there have been a lot of bright spots, but you also look at the efficiency and it's quite low this year. So I think ultimately you don't want him ever to be a super high usage offensive player, but as a really high-end defensive player that unlocks crazy value at the four and the ability to stretch it on offense, so you can play him with a non-spacing big. Like, there's ways to make him succeed. He just needs to be in the right situation, surrounded by the right personnel. And again, this is the same thing. This is why these players aren't B tier. They're noticeably better than the rest of the league, but they have holes to their game, and you have to do things to mitigate those disadvantages that they have to get more out of them. Because again, all of these players in this tier are capable of playing at a higher level, right? Or capable of matching a player higher on this list in a series or a game or whatever it may be. But it's that consistency night to night, and it's that ability to fit in different types of situations where all of a sudden Jaren's value takes a huge dip when Steven Adams gets hurt, and then you start to see kind of the flaws in the player. So this B tier, we went through it, I mean, pretty quickly here, recapping. These were players 39 through 48. So again, these are all top 50 players. I think I was very, very negative in this podcast, but these guys are all top 50 players in the league. They're all quite good. They're just not number one options, and I wanted to go through the reasons kind of that they're not. They obviously have noticeable skills, but weaknesses that we've seen get exploited are skills that we have not seen yet get fully developed. So next episode, we're going to talk about the B-minus tier. That did not make it on the graphic because there was too many names. but the B-minus tier, I am excited about because it has players that I find almost the further you get down the list, the more flawed the player is, the more interested I am in them. Because at this point, I don't really enjoy talking about Steph Curry anymore because he's obviously very, very good. Hall of Fame player. Is still really good. Still playing at an elite level. And is going to end up somewhere in the all-time conversation. Once you're there, you're splitting hairs so much. You're splitting microscopic hairs that it's really hard to just even do. Because like the next day, you're like, maybe I feel the opposite way. But when you get into these players with the more glaring weaknesses, it's almost like, hey, how do you fit these puzzle pieces together in a championship team with the higher-end guys? Like, which one of these skills can make it so you can optimize and kind of get over the hump? So I enjoy the worse the player, almost the more I enjoy it. But we're getting down there. We're working our way. This is part four. So if you want to talk to me, at Taylor Metrics on Twitter, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Basketball Index Podcast.